This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's Thursday, January 10th, 2019. Welcome to the WBBM Noon Business Hour. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. It's a little warmer than yesterday, 21 degrees, but it still feels like 9 above.
Well, the Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. The markets are in positive territory, just a skosh. That's not a scientific financial term, Elisa Parenti,
but it is now,
at least for our purposes. But how are the markets doing during the noon hour?
Yeah, that's right, Rob. After four winning sessions, we've gone back and forth between losses and gains, and we are in the green, so we may have a fifth winning session. The Dow up 42 points, NASDAQ gaining 8, S&P higher by 2, and the Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index advancing 0.2%. The Labor Department is among those agencies that's still open during this partial government shutdown, and a report from the Labor Department was much better than expected. Weekly jobless claims tumbled by 17,000 to a total 216,000. Now, retailers are putting some pressure on the averages after Macy's cut its annual profit forecast and Kohl's said holiday sales disappointed. Barnes & Noble may cut its earnings guidance by as much as 10% as it spends more to draw on customers. Target did better than most and better than expected in November and December, but its shares are sinking along with the whole sector. Macy's down 18.5% and Kohl's falling 6.5% in its wake. Bed Bath & Beyond is the exception. That retailer gave a rosy forecast for fiscal 2020 after the bell last night. Its shares are racing higher by 14%. Back to you, Rob and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. We're going to be talking about the winners and the losers among the retailers during the Christmas season and also the status right now of the government shutdown.
Consumer Electronics Show still ongoing in Las Vegas. We'll talk to John Apt of the Apt Electronics Store in Glenview about the latest and greatest in the future of TVs. And then we'll talk to Michael Palumbo about how legalized pot might be taking a bite out of the alcohol industry. All that and more coming up in the Noon Business Hour right here on WBBM.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It is a mixed bag for the retail sector in recent months. We're going to delve into that during our next segment. But right now, domestic gridlock, overseas trade, Fed policy dominate the headlines. And we welcome Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. Diane, which of these headlines are you following right now?
All of the above. Of course, right now the government shutdown is front and foremost because it's also delaying the intake of data and what we're getting. We're seeing these retail sectors, retailers coming out and talking about how they're performing on an individual basis, but that's not always what we see in aggregate spending. And I think that's the most important thing is we need to think about what is going on in aggregate spending. And what we saw during the holiday season was a return of low-income households to the mix while high-income households were being knocked about by the losses in equity markets. And so you saw a move downscale in spending, but much more larger spending gains at some of the discounters. And so I think we'll see that come out in the composition of spending the next couple of days. On the trade front, holding your breath on the China-U.S. trade negotiations is not the best way to approach it because they're really complex. And the good news is they're in negotiations. The bad news is it's complex and it'll take a lot of time. And verification that China actually adheres to whatever they promise is going to be the hardest thing to overcome. So we've got all of those things going on. And what the key issue is that as good as the economy has been, we do look poised for a slowdown. The question is, how much of a slowdown do we get? It certainly doesn't help the economy as we're moving into this phase of a tipping point to a slowdown in the expansion to have all this uncertainty about policy as well.
If you were a chief economist at the White House, what would be your first step?
Actually,
gotcha.
It's a big step. It's a leap. I think it would be sitting down and really thinking hard about what is needed in the U.S. economy today. And the one thing we need is clarity, not chaos. and, you know, emphasizing how much uncertainty and unpredictability take away from economic growth, and that's very important to understand right now. We got a nice boost from the tax cuts. There's a cost of that, and that's playing out now. And as that plays out, you don't want to exacerbate the slowdown with uncertainty, and that's something that I think is the most critical issue, is having some kind of predictability in policy decisions and an understanding of what the end game is for businesses and for consumers.
Outside of the unpredictability that you mentioned when it comes to both trade negotiations and the government shutdown, are there other concrete effects that a protracted shutdown would have on the economy from government workers, from furloughed government workers not spending as much money to possible delays in government purchasing over the course of time?
Absolutely, the delays. So we're sort of going into uncharted territory, and historically, government shutdowns have sort of gotten revised out of the data. Workers that the employment data will be affected for January. The survey is being done right now, and you'll see a loss of employment that gets revised back up as those government workers are paid for their back pay. But if it were to be prolonged, you have that compound and people leave the positions entirely and go find other work. Then you have no bench, which is already pretty shallow. In government, people don't think about some of the real critical jobs that these people do until they want them, like tax refunds. All of a sudden, those people don't come back. There's also the losses and blow to their own credit lines, their credit ratings that we're seeing. You know, the small restaurants that are across from federal office buildings, all of a sudden they're not getting the business they once did. That's not recouped, and over time, those things compound along with all the payments that are not going to government contractors. And that is a large universe. Although it's only a partial shutdown, those people who are not getting paid, over time, it compounds. And so you want to keep it as short as possible so that it does look like nothing but a little blip in the radar screen instead of something major on the economic horizon. And unfortunately, over time, this really compounds. We also know keeping the government shut is more costly than keeping it open, because we lose vital services, and there's then the cost of ramping up again and recouping data and all kinds of information that needs to be, and jobs that need to be done and services that need to be deployed and executed once the government reopens.
Now, very quickly, are there any trends that are starting to make themselves apparent as we start to see some of the numbers come in from the holiday shopping season?
Well, the biggest issue for the holiday shopping season is the distribution of where you're going to see spending gains. In discounters, you're going to see stronger gains because low-income households had the biggest wage gains and also got more paychecks during the holiday season. And that, along with the discounted places at the pump, really showed up in their spending because they spend everything they earn. That, of course, is much harder for government workers as we move forward. And we could see some spending blow on the low-income side as we move into the first quarter.
Thanks, as always, for the insights. Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton, based in Chicago. Coming up next, we'll identify the current winners and losers in retail.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, some retailers are on a roll while others are in the dumps. And we're joined by Dana Telsey, the CEO and chief research officer of the Telsey Advisory Group based in New York. Dana, welcome back to the program. Let's talk about some of the winners and losers in the holiday shopping season. And before we get to the bad news, let's talk about Target, one of our big winners from the holiday season of 2018. What did they do to have the edge?
I think one of the things you're seeing companies that work do, it's all about some of the products that they've put in there that have been innovative. Correct, they're right on pricing and are able to be super careful that way. And I also think some of their omni-channel enhancements, whether it's buy online, pick up in store, and delivery, have worked. I mean, you think about Target. The strong traffic, the digital growth of 29%, the store pickup plus drive-up growth of over 60%, they've really transformed the business. And the fact that all major product categories in their portfolio reported sales growth with outperformance in toys and baby, they were certainly helped by the closure of Toys R Us.
The other big winner of the holiday season is Costco. And it seems like you can pick out a trend here that it's not just a traditional department store that sells only clothes or maybe toys and electronics. These are stores that also have food options. I mean, of all the people going to Costco, how many were there buying gifts and how many were there buying beef tenderloins for Christmas dinner?
You know, what does the consumer want? They want convenience and ease. the fact that Costco's traffic was up around 560 basis points in the United States and ticket was up around 50 basis points, they certainly had healthy same-store sales, whether it's from traffic or ticket. And the fact that the business trends basically were quite solid is very encouraging. And what it really shows is you need to create that experience, and both of these companies are. I think the category, the fact that Costco saw fresh food up mid-single digits to high single digits, and also the fact that they saw hard lines up mid-single digits, the toy business was a great opportunity. And even their soft lines was up mid to high single digits, with special order apparel and housewares doing the best.
We have mentioned Macy's in many of our conversations because that is a kind of an old-time store compared to the newer Target-like stores. How did it do? How did Macy's do over the holiday?
I think Macy's had a tough time this holiday season. Overall, I think they saw softness in the middle of December, and they certainly expected to perform better, especially in the women's sportswear area. And I think a couple of factors hit them, whether it was the deeper lull than they expected, whether it was the fact that they had a fire in one of their fulfillment centers, whether it was the underperforming categories that they had, which were weak. I think it definitely had some issues there, whether it was women's sportswear, seasonal sleepwear, fashion jewelry, fashion watches, and cosmetics. Those are the weak links for them. And now the business in the fourth quarter, which has a higher skews higher towards digital, and that's a higher cost, with gross margin being down and SG&A dollars up, the formula wasn't right this holiday season. That's what made it a bit tougher for them.
All
their
right.
International tourist business, though, did improve to up 1% from down 4%.
It will be interesting to watch through this year. Dana, thanks for joining us. Dana Telsey is CEO, Chief Research Officer at Telsey Advisory Group in New York. And still ahead, Technology Thursday, the latest advances in televisions.
WBBM News Time, 6:25. Now WBBM Business from Bloomberg, powered by ComEd's Energy Efficiency Program. And here's Elisa Parenti.
Rob, the Dow is down 32 points now, and NASDAQ losing 18 or a quarter percent, S&P off 5. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is still gaining about a quarter percent. I just wanted to add on to the conversation about the retailers and note that Macy's stock is down today 19%. In terms of what that means dollar-wise, it's a $6 drop on the day. So Macy's shares at $25.80 a share. The historic high was only last year, in that number was $41.82. So it's been quite a sinking situation for Macy's. Now let's turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We are lower across the board. No real numbers on the Chinese stocks, and still bigger than expected crops in South America pushing things lower. March corn down 5.25 at 376.75. March beans down 16.75 at 907.25. And July wheat down 6.5 at 524.25. Lower across the board. This is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Many thanks, Pete. I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 1230. Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are in the red. We'll see what's troubling the markets.
Technology Thursday will explore innovations in the latest generation of televisions.
Alcohol brands are now dealing with increased competition from legalized marijuana.
Dorothy Brown addresses questions about her ballot eligibility in the race for mayor of Chicago.
President Trump travels to Texas, making the case for his more than $5 billion border wall.
Markets are in the red right now. The Dow down 52, the NASDAQ off 12, S&P 500 down by 3.
And AccuWeather says intervals of clouds and sunshine this afternoon, brisk and cold, a high today of 29. It's 21 degrees in Chicago as the Noon Business Hour continues, presented by Old Second Bank.
Well, the markets are heading a little lower this hour. We're joined by Tim Grisky, Chief Investment Strategist at Inverness Council in New York. Tim, could this have something to do with the Fed chief is doing a speech right now, and he's talking about the possibility of the economic data might be showing a little bit because of the government shutdown?
Well, I think, Chris, I think it's because not only the government shutdown, but the general U.S. economy is feeling the impact of tariffs, and really the global economy is feeling the impact of the tariff war between the U.S. and China. Europe's a huge trading partner of China, and they're very weak. So any U.S. company that sells overseas is going to be impacted by this tariff war.
And what is that going to do possibly to the economy and to the stock markets?
Well, it means I think you need to be a bit cautious here. Until we have a deal or a real indication that we have a trade deal and that it's going to stick, I think this market is not headed significantly higher. I think that's going to be a worry in the mind of every investor. Having said that, these latest negotiations went well. They're going to meet in Washington, is what we understand, later this month, the negotiators, and hopefully come to an agreement. So certainly bull markets are born out of bear markets, and we might have seen the bottom here at the end of the year and might be continue to be headed higher, assuming we do get that tariff agreement.
The markets, though, the financial markets tend to be rather resilient over time. There may be big swings one way or the other, but ultimately they get used to reality, whatever that reality may be. And the last 2 years have kind of put that theory to the test because there's just so much news that moves markets one way or the other. So wouldn't water find its own depth after a while, even whether it's the government shutdown or protracted trade negotiations? Eventually the markets find their equilibrium.
Totally agree with you, Rob. The saying is markets, bull markets, climb a wall of worry. In other words, they power through these negative issues, dealing with them, knowing that they're going to be resolved or they're going to evolve and that the markets and the economy is going to adjust to them. So whatever trade deal we get, and eventually there will be some trade deal, the markets will adjust to that. And if you look over the long term, stocks move higher. It's just if you want to play the game, which a lot of people do, of getting money out before a big downturn or try to get money out before a big downturn and then call the bottom, none of that's easy, but that's a way of making extra money in the stock market other than simply holding on for the long term.
What potential impact could we see on the economy if the government shutdown continues for a protracted period of time? I mean, we're talking about furloughed workers not spending money and not patronizing businesses. We could start seeing the government rolling, not making major purchases. I mean, what are some of the risks that haven't become apparent already? What could we see if this goes on, let's say, 40 days or 60 days or even beyond that?
Yeah, well, at some point we're going to see a resolution of this too. The market, I think, anticipates that. But, having said that, I'll give you an example. Today, one of my colleagues was down in Washington, D.C., or went down to Washington, D.C. He said the plane was empty going down, empty coming back. And American Airlines today pre-announced negative revenues, negative earnings for its fourth quarter. I'm sure the shutdown had something to do with that. So, we will see that in businesses. It's not just Washington, D.C. that employs government workers. We'll see it in Chicago. We'll see it in Montana and Vermont. There are government workers all over the place who are simply not being paid. And so this will have an economic effect. It will impact GDP, even what's occurred so far. But eventually this will get resolved, whether we get a wall or not. The government will start working again and people will start getting paid.
What areas in the markets would you like to have money in right now, Tim?
Well, it's tough, Chris. We think we're in a very uncertain point in the market here, given the tariff negotiations. We don't think we're headed back to all-time highs anytime very soon, given some of that overhang. But having said that, over the longer term, we still love these disruptive technology stocks. So, whether that's Amazon or Netflix, PayPal, Adobe, all of these companies are taking market share, growing their markets, and delivering to their shareholders and to their customers. So they produce products that people want, and these are companies to own for the long term.
Thanks a lot for joining us this afternoon. Tim Griske, Chief Investment Strategist at Inverness Council, based in New York, New York. Up next in Technology Thursday, checking out the latest advances in television.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday as the Consumer Electronics Show rolls on in Las Vegas. We're taking a look at what's new in televisions. We welcome in John Apt, co-president of Apt Electronics in Glenview. John, welcome back to the program. It seems nowadays that the big screen TV is not the luxury item that it once was, that everybody... A 50-inch flat screen, high-def television is seemingly within everyone's reach when it comes to price. So what are the new frontiers in TVs in 2019?
Well, you're absolutely right. TVs continue to fall in price year after year. The technology improves, and they're able to build more sets, and the price comes down. But this year, we're seeing all the major manufacturers roll out super large TVs and technology called 8K, which is eight times the resolution of a normal high-definition picture.
And if I wanted to install a home Jumbotron in my living room with the 8K resolution, I mean, what is the difference between 8K and, let's say, the 4K that's available at Apt and other retailers across the Chicago area?
Well, the difference is the picture resolution and the clarity. Unfortunately, though, as you know, even with 4K, there's limited content available. So these TVs are coming out. It's kind of the chicken and the egg scenario. They make the TV first, and then the content people will make their TV shows and movies. All the demonstrations I saw over the last few days have been pre-formatted content that Sony's and the Samsung's and the LG's of the world have made on their own.
I'm just learning about some of the terms here. Tell me what roll-up OLED is.
So LG introduced a TV that literally rolls. It's like wallpaper, and it rolls. So if you don't want to see anything, they had a display where it literally rolled down and folded into nothing. It got hidden into a box. But it literally hangs up like wallpaper. It's super easy to ship, and it's OLED technology, and it was also 8K resolution. So the picture was just breathtaking.
In this past year, perhaps this, but also anything else that just knocked you out?
I saw a lot of robot technology that I thought had vastly improved from previous years, and not just robots that, you know, clean your floors and vacuum up, but actually robots that can assist you in a retail environment or assist an elderly person. Google was all over the place with their Google Assistant product, really incorporating that into thousands of items that I saw on the floor. And there was a bunch of health tech and sports tech, and I sort of went off the beaten path a little bit just to check out some things that I wouldn't normally do. And it's been a great show this year.
Well, as we talk about screens getting larger to become the centerpiece of a family room or a living room, are there also improvements on the small screen arena too? Because people want to catch up with their shows on their phone, let's say, while they're taking the train to or from work.
Streaming has become so popular with Netflix and Hulu and DirecTV now. There's all sorts of services out there, and it's so easy to watch. You know, you could be watching on your television at home, and you don't quite finish the show, and then you pick up your tablet or your phone if you're commuting to work, and you can, you know, it'll start playing exactly where you left off. So the tech is getting easier for people, and it's super convenient. And it's it's really easily accessible.
On an unrelated note, John, historically, do the NFL playoffs, I mean, do they spur people to buy the really sweet TV so they can watch the Super Bowl? And if that's the case, are some customers in the Chicago area leaving money on the table because
we
of the
money back?
Yeah, or they're just not buying the TV because of that double doink on Sunday night.
Yeah, I was at that game. Quite not the greatest outcome, but typically we do see in January we do see an uptick in television sales. We sell nationally on our website at app.com, and you know there's a lot of teams that are in the playoffs, and we do see upticks in some of those markets. People want to see their teams on the best TV possible. Yes.
So, John, I've been told that you'll be back at Super Bowl time so we could talk about how to optimize the viewing experience. John Apt, co-president of Apt Electronics in Glenview, thank you for joining us this afternoon on the Noon Business Hour. And be sure to join us tomorrow during the NBH for our final live report from the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. And still to come, how alcohol companies are reacting to the growing legalization of marijuana.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Alcohol makers are taking note of the growing acceptance of marijuana, but let's discuss some of their strategies with Michael Palumbo, manager of the TMT Perseverance Fund and author of the book Calculated Risk here in Chicago. Welcome back to our program, Mike. This may not only just be a financial event, but possibly a whole new trend in our society. What do you think?
Yeah, good afternoon, Chris and Rob. Thanks for having me on. You know, liquor, beer, and tobacco sales have been very sluggish over the past couple years, and that can be directly attributable to the increase in cannabis consumption. So what's happening is you're getting some M&A from the big tobacco and spirits companies like Philip Morris, Constellation Brands. They're buying some of these marijuana companies, or at least parts of them, because they're afraid of missing out on what the new trend is. And the new trend definitely is that marijuana is an alternative to alcohol consumption. And that's what's eating into these companies' sales.
And this is a calculated risk.
And no doubt it is. It's also and emphasis on the risk here. So, you know, you've got Canadian companies where pot is legal, and then you have the U.S. companies where it's still federally illegal and a Schedule I substance. So, you know, that has to change in order for the U.S. companies to be able to grow at a high rate that we expect to happen. We do expect legislation to go through Congress and get signed by President Trump in the next year or two that will take it off Schedule I. If that happens and it allows states to control the destiny of the cannabis industry, then these U.S. companies like MedMen, Acreage, Curaleaf, Green Thumb, these are some of the big guys, they will do well because they're in the U.S., and the U.S. would be the biggest cannabis market in the world.
Mike, how are the marijuana, the legal marijuana products cutting into the liquor and spirits market? Is it simply a matter of if somebody's having a party, they don't buy the two additional bottles of wine and get edibles instead? Are people smoking at parties? I mean, how is it being consumed?
Well, you know what? I can't speak for what everybody's doing necessarily, but I mean, there's no doubt that there's a combination of both of those things happening in that instead of getting that bottle of wine, people are just, it's just the marijuana industry has done a great job of packaging their products in a way that consumers are now, it's not taboo like it used to be. And so you can have an edible as opposed to having a glass of wine, no doubt about it. And that's what's happening. It's just a matter of how fast this is going to change. It's not going to turn around. This is a trend that's going to continue to grow.
If let's take a look into the future. It's 2029. You're going to a sporting event, a baseball game, a football game. You look out and you see the advertisements in the stadium. Do you see marijuana advertised alongside beer at sporting events?
Well, if I believe that it will get parity with alcohol. So I think it will end up being treated the same. So if they are allowing, which they are, allowing advertisements for beer and other spirits, they certainly will allow that in the future. Yeah, and you're talking about 5 to 10 year process here, but that is coming. And what also is coming is probably even concessions at sporting events that would sell it. Because if it becomes recreationally legal nationwide or by state, like it is in California. California is our biggest state, obviously, and it's recreationally legal there. I could totally see 5 years from now at a Dodger game, you could go, you know, have an edible and it would be totally legal. But it has to come off Schedule One. So right now the feds are the key, and we do believe that in the next year or two it will get taken off Schedule One, and then they'll let the states decide themselves.
All right. You heard it here. Michael, thanks so much for joining us. Mike Palumbo is manager of the TMT Perseverance Fund, author of the book Calculated Risk here in Chicago. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55, WBBM Business, sponsored by Spot Hero from Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Excuse me there, Rob. We are seeing some losses here. The Dow down 44 points, NASDAQ off 22, S&P lower by 6. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg still higher by 0.25%. Sorry about that. The wife of former Nissan chair Carlos Ghosn has issued a plea saying her detained husband is having health issues and that the family has not been able to speak with him. Ghosn has been under arrest since November, facing charges of financial misconduct. Ghosn's son has said his father has lost 22 pounds over the 7 weeks since he was taken into custody. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago. WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.